You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Don't be fooled by the deceptively simple title of Rafael Iglesias' latest novel, A Happy Marriage. Although its subject is the nearly 30-year marriage of Margaret and Enrique Sabas, the story alternates between the awkward early days of their courtship and the harrowing final weeks of Margaret's losing battle with cancer, leaving out most of the happy years in between. The novel is published by Scribner, and pleased that it has brought Rafael Iglesias back to our show today. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Oh, it's great to be here.
And this novel has been called your most autobiographical. Your first novel was pretty autobiographical.
It was. My first and second and this novel were very autobiographical.
Like Enrique, you dropped out of high school to write your first novel, which was published to great acclaim. You were married to a woman named Margaret, who died of cancer in 2004. So why not? I'm sure many people have asked you, why not write it as a memoir a la Joan Didion's The Year of Magical Thinking?
Well, first of all, let me say I didn't write it as a novel to provide any cover for myself. All the embarrassing or bad things that the hero does are things I actually did. The reason I didn't write it as a memoir is that memoir is a form in which you're always looking backward of recollection. I wanted the reader to feel that they were in the skin and the shoes of Enrique, both as a bumbling, oafish, insecure young man, and also as a man of 50 who has about 2 weeks in which he knows his wife will die, and he's helping to arrange her farewells to everyone.
But you've written in third person.
Yes. That allows a certain kind of objectivity, even though it may seem like a meaningless trick to the reader. It separates me enough from the character so that I can be more objective about him.
Because I'm glad you said that, because many writers have told me that fiction gives them more freedom to tell the truth. They can tell those embarrassing things. But you say that's not the reason. You would have been told all those embarrassing things about yourself and things that you did and things you couldn't do and things you thought, even if you had written this as memoir.
Yes.
Because that's the reason for writing this book, isn't it?
Which reason? I'm sorry, I didn't follow.
Telling all of those other things. Otherwise, it's just, gee, Margaret was great, and we had a wonderful marriage.
Yes, it's true. But I also wanted to explore the marriage in an objective way, and for me, somehow, even though it may not seem to make sense, making it into fiction allowed me to get to a sort of deeper psychological and emotional truth, mostly because I can compress things, I can recreate events that I don't actually remember. I mean, I don't really remember conversations I had 30 years ago or even actually last week. So there's that as well.
Although there's been much talk about the blurring between fiction and nonfiction with categories like creative nonfiction memoirs that turn out to be fictionalized, and many memoirs will tell you the exact same thing you just said. I can't remember conversations I had. And also there's a certain amount of shaping of a story. Otherwise it becomes really boring. And Proust realized that at the beginning of the 20th century, didn't he?
Yes. But to me, at least growing up, memoir was a very specific form. It was a form of recollections of youth, whereas the autobiographical novel was really the form in which one looked at one's entire life. And that's really the form I was working in. It was just more familiar to me and made more sense to me.
Your readers will understand that this was a happy marriage, even though the book concentrates on the more difficult parts. Is it more difficult to write eloquently about happy times than painful events?
No, there just isn't conflict in happy times. And so conflict is usually what moves stories forward. I also think that there's a danger in lingering on happy times beyond a certain point that you're romanticizing. And marriage is, after all, not a romance. It's a long, lifelong partnership. And so I concentrated not just on the unhappy times, but also on the points of compromise, of change, and of maturing.
Well, you could have romanticized the awkward first dates, because you alternate chapters between the early times and then the heart-wrenching end of Margaret's three-year battle with cancer.
Yes, I wanted to use the contrast between gain and loss, between life and death. But there are several chapters that drop you into the middle of the marriage, into one tremendous crisis for the hero in which he falls in love with another woman, and also another, in a way, crisis in which he realizes he's fallen back in love with her. Some of those passages are not really about happiness or unhappiness. They're about the changes that take place between two people.
Well, with both storylines, we know how they'll end from their beginnings, that Enrique and Margaret will get married and that she will lose her fight against cancer.
But what we don't know is how. Mm-hmm. We don't really know how he will say goodbye to her, how you can say goodbye to somebody who's a partner of your life. And also, in a strange way, you don't know quite how he'll win her. You know that he will, but the how of it and the mechanism by which they connect is part of the mystery of his marriage, and so it informs the ending as well.
My guest is Rafael Iglesias, who's written 9 novels, including Dr. Neruda's Cure for Evil and Fearless, which he also adapted for the screen. He's written screenplays for any number of films, Death and the Maiden, Les Miserables, From Hell, Dark Water. His latest is called A Happy Marriage, and it is published by Scribner. And this is being published 5 years after Margaret's death. How long after she died did you start thinking about writing about what happened, and did you actually start writing it?
Actually, I wanted to write a novel about a long marriage before Margaret ever became ill. But I couldn't do it for the reason that it would have been a terrible invasion of her privacy. Also, I don't think I could have looked at my marriage unless it had come to an end. So I had, after her death, a sort of realization that I could do it at last. But when I tried, right after she died, I couldn't do it. It was simply too painful and too embarrassing in some ways, and also too hard to access a kind of objective tableau. But after several years, after about 3 years, I found I couldn't really write anything else. And so I began writing it partly to fulfill my own ambition, but also partly to get through the loss of my marriage.
Well, you do describe the last experiences in rather horrifying detail. In fact, it's not the sort of thing I would associate with a novel. I can't remember reading a novel that has dealt with it in this way before. Is there any?
I don't know. I didn't really make a survey of them. I felt that cancer was such a common experience for people now, since 1 in 3 will get it. I really don't know anybody who hasn't lost somebody close to them to it. I felt that, like any other common experience, I needed to deal with it in a straightforward fashion.
The physical indignity surrounding the end of life these are things that anyone who's gone through it with a loved one will connect to.
Yes, and also I think it's part of understanding the real nature of love, that at a certain point it transcends what's physical.
She decides to take steroids to have the energy to say her goodbyes and then withhold hydration to allow herself to die.
Well, in her last 9 months, she can't eat her digestive tract is shut down, and she can't get any nutrition or hydration. So she decides, as she's very close to death, to really sort of time her death so that she can deliberately say goodbye to everyone.
This is also a book about making art, isn't it? Enrique meets Margaret through a friend, Bernard, who's an aspiring novelist who went to college with her. And he winds up not making it as a writer. Bernard becomes an enormously successful cultural critic and has his own TV show. There's a kind of a commentary here on the way our society values its artists. And Enrique, like you, has more success as a screenwriter than as a novelist.
I didn't intend to make a larger comment on society, just on the part of what marriage often is to people, which is an acceptance of the passage of time and of the little failures that we have or don't have, the disappointments that we accept. Part of it is that Enrique, at the beginning of the story, thinks that ambition and his work is what's going to be the most important thing in his life. In the end, it's not. It's really his marriage and the people he's close to and the raising of his children. So it's partly that, his shift of values.
It's interesting. His wife has been to college, as Bernard has, and we sense a bit of jealousy on Enrique's part, although he achieves this great success at a very young age, 17 years old. He never went to college. Did you have those feelings as well? Were you envious of your wife because she'd had that experience?
Actually, I was envious of anyone who had that experience of spending 4 years of college, in which not that much was expected of you except to study and have fun.
Well, could you have gone to college anyway?
I certainly could have, yes. It was a great mistake on my part. But partly the reason it's in the novel is that he, when he meets Margaret, is an odd character. He's 21 and he has a full-blown career and seems to people to be quite mature. But in many ways, he's emotionally and psychologically still a child. Part of what
because he never had that socializing experience of college.
Exactly. He went directly from being a kid in the parents' home to being out in the world and being expected to make a living and to deal with public matters and so on. So there's an exterior that seems mature, but inside is immature. And part of the story of his marriage, like a lot of long marriages actually, is that in a way Margaret and Enrique sort of raise each other. It's part of what makes the loss of her so overwhelming to him, because it's really the loss of his entire adult self.
The novel is also a portrait of the changes that New York City and Greenwich Village in particular have gone through between 1975, when the early scenes are set, and the end in 2004. In the 70s scenes, 8th Street is populated largely by junkies, and Enrique is afraid to venture east of Broadway after 9 p.m. He's afraid he's going to be mugged. Was it really that bad? I lived here at the time.
I remember it as being that bad, but I could be exaggerating. I'm half Cuban, and my father always claimed that Cubans were prone to exaggeration. I remember New York as being quite different in Greenwich Village in the 1970s than it is today. And indeed, the city is, as many people have observed, the city is a living thing. And in a way, I use it as a kind of character in the novel to show the changes and growth in the characters.
Do you think the village has improved? Is gentrification always a totally positive thing?
No, I think it's a mixed blessing. There was a lot about the village that allowed a certain kind of youth and energy and frankly, people who didn't have a lot of money, which made it more interesting, I think.
Many people, I'm sure, are curious about your youth. Your parents were both writers and politically involved. Was growing up in that household a kind of a college education in its own right, except that you didn't wind up going to a lot of beer parties?
My parents were both born into very poor families, and it was a long struggle for them to become writers. My father didn't begin writing until he was 43, and my mother didn't publish her first book till she was 56. So a lot of my childhood was their beginnings as a writer. As they were learning, I was sort of picking up things from them. But also, they believed in writing. They believed, as a lot of people of their generation did, that they were going to change the world or really right wrongs through their writing. And some of that missionary sense had a tremendous impact on me and in some ways diverted me as a young writer.
So you see that in your work?
I see it as something that I really had to give up in my work, because I think those expectations that writing fiction was somehow going to change the world is really just not true.
Now, Joan Didion turned The Year of Magical Thinking into a play. Can you imagine doing that with this book or turning it into a film?
No, not personally, no. For me, I'm very happy with the experience of writing it as a novel, and I'd rather not, you know, take any chances.
Well, because a film is always a collaboration. And interestingly, society often values it higher than this much more difficult act of creating a literary novel in a room all by yourself.
Well, people love movies, and that's natural enough. But yes, it's a collaboration, and this is one subject in which I really don't want to collaborate on.
A Happy Marriage is a collaboration of a different sort. Rafael Iglesias' novel about marriage in its early days and in its final days, published by Scribner. Fabulous reviews. You must be pleased.
The reviews have been lovely. The reception of the book has been incredibly sweet and nice and very satisfying.
And thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you.